Now, precisely two Australian women have achieved the extraordinary feat of winning gold medals at three separate Olympics. Points for naming the great Dawn Fraser. It's possibly because she was a leading member of a brilliant team that far fewer people, I imagine, sadly, could name the other. Rochelle Hawkes won gold with the Hockey Roos in 1988, 1996, and famously in Sydney in 2000. She was remarkable not just as a supreme athlete, but as a leader widely admired at the top level across international professional sport. Under her captaincy, according to sports analyst Sam Walker, there had, quote, never been a more dominant hockey team of either gender in the entire history of the sport. Less well known, though, was her battle to play at all at the elite level due to a condition that struck her in her teens. Rochelle Hawkes, welcome to the year that made me.
Thank you very much, Hugh.
Now, Rochelle, what are you doing these days?
Well, in fact, I'm still in sport. I've just signed up with the Gold Medal Ready program, which is basically a collaboration between the Australian Institute of Sport and the military to help current athletes with their mental preparation. And they've brought in about 30 or so alumni, so ex-Olympians, and we're there basically to support and guide them and help them with that mental edge. So there's camps that are held at Holsworthy Barracks in Sydney, where there's some military-style training and there's a lot of cognitive problem-solving, and then there's some tough tasks that require a lot of mental resilience.
So what is the mental edge? Is it discipline? Is it a capacity to withstand pain through the training periods and stay focused? What are you really trying to impart to them?
Yeah, well, a lot of the physical stuff, so being able to withstand pain, they've all got that, but it's the mental approach. It's the ability to perform on the day when the pressure that you put on yourselves and outside pressure might be too much to bear for inexperienced athletes. So it's being able to share the stories about how we coped with a lot of pressure, whether you were ranked number one in the world and going in and everyone expected you to win, or whether, you know, you had some demons that you had to overcome. We had one swimmer who recently went on the camp at Holsworthy Barracks, and she was very scared of confined spaces. And one of the activities was actually to crawl into some confined spaces. And she said that helped her a lot with breathing underwater and that sort of thing. She hates holding a breath. So there's so many different facets to it, and it's being able to try and share stories across a number of different sports, and everyone's got a different story to tell, and those athletes are able to draw from some of those stories that might most resonate with them.
I wonder if there's a difference between different sports in the sense that if you're, at, say, a swimmer with a sprint event, your task is to simply deliver your maximum physical potential in the very limited time to get to the other end of the pool and back or whatever it might be. Whereas you get other team sports, a sport like hockey, where the whole game is so much more dynamic. There's so much going on. You're competing against other players who are engaged in their own highly dynamic decision-making about what to do with the ball at any moment in time. Is there any overarching lesson to be learnt in terms of mental strength which can apply to both the sprinter and someone in a 90-minute, 80-minute, 90-minute field sport?
Absolutely. The obvious differences that you've described, but in terms of the preparation leading into event and the routines that you develop to be able to be at your best, like some people, for example, like to be on edge when they go into a competition. Some people like to be calm. But I think the one thing that resonates across all athletes is being prepared, knowing yourself very well, what works for you and what doesn't. So I think a lot of young athletes, they rely on their physical ability and don't think a lot about their mental approach. So having a routine, and it's the ones that don't have a routine that tend to find that they don't perform at their very best when it matters.
Do you think these lessons have applications outside sport?
Absolutely. I think there's definitely a crossover. And, you know, I think of work life and some of the businesses I've worked in, you don't necessarily find that everyone has a routine. They might be very ad hoc about what they do. They don't prioritise a lot of the, you know, the day-to-day activities. So I think there are...
That sounds like 90% of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Failure to prioritise.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are lessons. And I'm learning along the way. You know, I've spoken to a number of the alumni alumni, and there are things like we've learned about stress. Stress is really, you should embrace it. You shouldn't run away from it. And the athletes are now learning about the physiological side of stress and that stress is a good thing. And we didn't know that when we were competing. So there's a lot of information that we're providing these athletes that we didn't have when we were around.
Now, a fellow called Sam Walker set about studying 1,200 winning sports teams across more than 100 years in 37 sports. What he was trying to find out is what were the ingredients that make sports teams enormously successful? And he concluded, in fact, that there was just one. The most crucial ingredient in a team that achieves and sustains historic greatness is the character of the player who leads it. And in that same extended work, he pointed to the Hockey Roos under your leadership. Let's start with the premise. Is the most crucial ingredient in a team that achieves sustained greatness the character of the player who leads it?
Well, I believe there's probably a combination of things there. And of course, I'd love to say, of course, it's the captain. But I really do think in a team environment, there are many factors at play. But I certainly think that you have to have a strong leadership group. And whether that's one captain or a group of four or five, they really set the tone. And I really believe there is a combination of having a coach of quality and a leadership group and an eclectic mix of leaders, not just the same sort of personality types, but a variety of personalities that can engage with the whole group, because you get some leaders who are very much on field. They'll lead by example. You get others that are very engaging and they can bring other younger players along. And you get other leaders who are very strategic and that they like the tactical component of a game.
Well, your career at the highest level looked at one stage as if it wasn't going to happen at all. The year that made you, as you've nominated, is 1987. What happened?
Yeah, it was a really tricky year. So I was first selected in the Australian women's team in 1985 when I was 18. And it didn't take long when injuries started to play a role. And I was diagnosed with a condition called compartment syndrome, which affected my lower legs, my calf muscles. So what happens with that syndrome is it doesn't always display. So when you're competing, your legs might be fine and then another time they might really flare up and it's like a cramping sensation in your legs and they feel heavy, like rocks are in your calf muscles and you're kind of dragging them behind you and you can't get any acceleration. They feel tired and the condition basically means that you're exercising and the blood's pumping to the muscles, they expand and the sheath that surrounds the muscle is too tight. So after having the first operation in 1986, when I was first diagnosed, they go in and they slit the sheath and the sheath opens up and the muscle can protrude. So it releases a lot of that pressure. But what I found, I had that operation on the anterior compartments and I managed to stay in the Australian team. But what I found was it wasn't completely fixed and I was still having pain every now and again and still struggling to sprint and run in certain training sessions in certain competitions. And this continued until 1987 when we had a pre-Olympic Games tournament. And I remember playing in that tournament and having a particularly poor game and the coach making a beeline towards me and he found me and he said, look, you're just not what I'm looking for. That was the moment I thought, well, this is the crossroads of my career, really. I've started in 85. It hasn't been a great run. I've had one operation. What am I going to do? And remember going back to the hotel, a lot of soul searching again, looking towards my mum, and she gave me a lot of comfort. And her mantra was always, you get up and you fight. And so I had to make a decision. Will I go and do something else? This is all too hard. Or will I get up and fight? And I managed to stay in the team, try and manage the condition, and went to the 88 games in Seoul in 88. But I was a fringe player and I sat on the pine for most of the tournament. And what it did was it drove me to say to myself that I'm not going to be that person anymore. So following our successful Games where we won the gold medal in 88. I went back home and I had another operation in 1989 on the sides of my, I had the anteriors done, the fronts of my legs, and then I had the perineals done, the sides, and finally this was successful. And from there I was able to really become more integral part of the Australian team and really enjoy the ride that followed.
So you're physically released to be the player you could be?
That's right. I was physically released and I'd sort of developed a tough mental constitution because of the way I'd sort of started in the game. And then from my mum, who was a bit of a rock and she's a pretty tough cookie, I had that inbuilt into me as well. So from there, I was able to move forward with my career.
What an inspiring career it's been. It's fantastic to talk to you, Rochelle. Your song is You Too, With or Without You. Why this song?
I was a huge, or I still am, but a huge U2 fan back then, and the Joshua Tree was one of my favourite albums in that year, and I listened to it over and over again, and I loved every song on that album, but that song resonated with me the most, and I still sing it to this day at many a karaoke night. I absolutely love it.
Rochelle Hook, so great to talk to you, and good luck in all your future endeavours, and good luck in inspiring all those other athletes who are going to go off and doubtless win glory for themselves and for the country in Tokyo and beyond. Here's You Too.
Thank you.
Too bad, were they? You Two in their day, With or Without You, the song chosen by my guest for the year that made me, Rochelle Hawkes.